The higher you go, the less you can do in an organization, especially a global organization as large and as extensive as the Coca-Cola company and Coca-Cola system. So at the end of the day, I saw as my prime responsibility the need to communicate effectively, clearly, a vision forward, and also to inspire and engage our organization and our total system to align behind the vision.
On this podcast, we speak with Muhtar Kent, former chairman and CEO of the Coca-Cola Company. Kent shares insights on the role communication played in revitalizing growth of the world's most recognized brand. You're listening to CEO Voices, Leading with Communication, with your hosts, June West and Steve Soltis.
Muhtar, you walked into the CEO role at the Coca-Cola Company in 2008 after nearly 30 years of global experience in the Coke system on the operational side, customer service side, and bottling and business development sides of the organization. What were some of the key communication lessons you learned on this 30-year preparatory journey that led you to being tapped as the CEO of Coca-Cola?
Thank you, June. And let me just say it's a pleasure being with you and with Steve, my good friend Steve. It's an absolute pleasure to once again be able to talk to Darden students. I believe it's been 3 years or so since I came there last and spoke. To your question, June, to be able to communicate properly, you must first learn how to listen properly. So empathy is really important. Building trust is really important, critically important, building trust. Communication always will trump data analytics and reports every single time. So you've got to really be seen outside to be able to build trust and for people to have trust in you and respect for you.
What did you see as your change mandate coming in as CEO? And how did you go about communicating this to your senior leadership team and other key influencers to build consensus and trust, as you say?
Was appointed president and chief operating officer in 2007. And then later, the following year, I became the CEO. My charge was to create avenues, real avenues for sustainable long-term growth. I pulled together a team of trusted colleagues, of experts, colleagues who had proven themselves, who shared a common vision, who shared a common story, people who complemented really my strengths with their own unique attributes. We met constantly, one-on-one, team meetings, leadership meetings. We went on customer visits. We met many times in the marketplace, market visits, etc. And that's how we started to begin to chart the course for a journey of sustainable growth.
Muhtar, just to pick up on that, shortly after you became CEO, I want to say it was 2009 or so, you led the first ever company and bottling partner shared vision for the Coca-Cola system, which you call the 2020 vision. Can you walk us through the genesis of that vision and how you got buy-in from your bottling partners? Not an easy feat, 275 independent bottling partners all around the world, some with aligned interests, some with perhaps not aligned interests, all very, very powerful and influential people in their local markets.
Let me just say at the outset that one of my key partners in formulating that 2020 vision was my great colleague and friend, John Farrell. We lost him, unfortunately, to an illness. John was a Darden alumni who headed up our strategy team at Coca-Cola. The 2020 vision, as we phrased it, was grounded in the reality that the Coca-Cola company could only win if our bottlers also won and vice versa. We went on an extensive world tour, getting the input of all our bottlers. And we got their input, we got their alignment on strategy. It was a year long in the making. And then I brought together all the bottlers, ownership of all the bottlers. We knew that vision needed to be both aspirational, it needed to be inspirational, and it charted our way forward in sustainably growing our brands, improving our operational efficiency, in creating tighter connections, better connections, more stable connections with retailers, also empowering our own people, the whole organization, which was 740,000 people working across the system organization, working across 207 nations. It also embedded really important sustainability initiatives way back in 2008 into the core of our business. So today, ESG is such a buzzword. Everywhere I go, I hear ESG, you know, environmental sustainability initiatives. But we did that back in 2008 and 9, and we built it into the core of our business, driving social value and taking care of our share owners. Then we put it all on one page, localized it, and that vision was the foundation virtually for my entire communication efforts over the next 8 years. We had in the back of our mind when we put all this together in 2008 and 2009 that we understood really well what is referred to today as the stakeholder value creation model. And so we were one of the first in the large Fortune companies that actually architected the stakeholder value creation model. And what do I mean by that stakeholder value creation model is as follows. In order to sustainably grow value for your share owners, you have to also generate value on a sustainable basis for all your key stakeholders. So in our case, it started with our employees, then our consumers, then our customers around the world that served our consumers, then our partners, all our bottling partners, our NGO partners, because we believed from the beginning what we call the power of partnerships, that when you partner, you can actually generate synergies on a lasting basis. And then even in that stakeholder group, was governments that hosted us in 207 nations and communities that hosted us. So we believed in creating value for that entire stakeholder team. And that's what brought us to our sustainability initiatives too, like our water neutrality program. We put a stake in the ground and said in 2010 that by 2020, we would become water neutral so that we could actually be a leader in creating awareness and respect for one of the most important resources in our world. And then our 5x20 program, we wanted to, outside the four walls of the Coca-Cola company, create 5 million women entrepreneurs by the year 2020. Again, part of our stakeholder value creation model. We achieved water neutrality 5 years ahead of schedule in 2015 instead of 2020. And by the end of this year, my colleagues that are still working at the Coca-Cola company have told me that we will achieve the 5 million goal, the biggest woman entrepreneurial program in the world undertaken by a commercial organization.
Mutar, let's fast forward to 2017, 2018. You're nearing the end of your tenure of an incredibly productive and celebrated run as chairman and CEO of one of the largest and most recognized and powerful brands in the world. You increased shareholder value by billions and billions of dollars. You made our brands relevant again in international markets all around the world. So you were like constantly traveling around the world, having impact in the local markets. And I'm thinking a lot of that is based on your own heritage as a dual citizen of the United States and Turkey, growing up in a diplomatic family, living all around the world, speaking 6 different languages. You are the consummate globalist, and it really showed in Coca-Cola's performance globally during your tenure. But if you look back at, you know, the performance metrics and the relationship improvement with bottlers, you talk a great deal about our social license to operate at the Coca-Cola company and how that was, you know, we're really pioneers in that. So when you look at all of those factors, Mutar, what legacies are you most proud of?
The growth that was achieved generating a total stakeholder value creation model, strengthening the financial health and customer responsiveness was a really important feat for our company. The bottlers really felt as part of a unique system, as part of a unique club, and the motivation, the energy of the system was really increased and heightened. Getting our system to think about the shifting consumer expectations was critical. As we were moving our marketing and communication efforts deeper into the virtual and social worlds, where our consumers reside and the leadership that we show in the environment in creating awareness for all of us to transfer a better planet to the next generations. Although we're century-old brands, we're as young as a few weeks in terms of their energy to the consumers and what they meant to the consumers. And then working with business, government, civil society, what I call the Golden Triangle, to address a lot of the societal problems, I think were important elements that I would want to mention.
Muhtar, just picking up on those accomplishments and your own leadership style, I remember quite well an interview you did with Adi Ignatius, the editor of Harvard Business Review. In fact, I believe you were on the cover that month of HBR as a result of the interview. You had some really interesting things to say about the power of communication and the CEO's responsibility to ultimately be the chief spokesperson and the chief communicator for the organization he or she leads. Can you walk us through your thinking on that responsibility?
The higher you go, the less you can do in an organization, especially a global organization as large and as extensive as the Coca-Cola company and the Coca-Cola system. So at the end of the day, I saw as my prime responsibility as the need to communicate effectively, clearly, a vision forward, and also to inspire and engage our organization and our total system to align behind the vision. 80-90% of my entire tenure over the 10 years involved communication, both formal and informal. As the CEO or the head of an organization as extensive as the Coca-Cola company and Coca-Cola system, you don't, you know, create advertising, or you don't create products, or you don't actually yourself sell products to a customer or to a consumer, or manage day-to-day operations per se, the factories or the concentrate business or the supply chain. What you do instead is through your communication, both formal and informal, influence, you inspire, you also engage with all your stakeholders, starting with your employees and then your consumers, your customers, your share owners, your government leaders, regulators, communities, and partners and others.
The Darden School is one of the few schools of business in the country that require a course in communication for our students. And I believe today, more so than ever, communication is so important from a CEO and the C-suite. Through your experience, as you look today now during this pandemic, how would you rate the communication performance of some of your peer Fortune 500 CEOs as they have wrestled with how do they communicate with their employees, customers, partners, and individuals as well? What advice would you have for them?
I think by and large, leaders have stepped up really, both in the United States and in Europe, stepped up to the challenge of open communication during this time in nearly almost 100% virtual environment. It's tough. So, you know, at best, what you can do is nurture your existing relationships, but it's very hard to create a new relationship on Zoom or on Microsoft Meeting. It's also mandatory to establish transparency, you know, as much as one can during this time. Some have done better than others, and I'm sure we'll continue to see the cream rise to the top over the next several months. I don't think you can ever say you've over-communicated in this period. And the other piece of important advice is having focus. There is just so much distraction out there today that focus is really important. It's imperative for a CEO to be the chief focus officer. Keep the ship on course and keep the crew engaged and inspired and keep all the stakeholders, not just your own employee, but all the entire group of stakeholders inspired and engaged.
Thank you. And we have time, I believe, for one final question. Is that correct, Steve? Steve and I are always looking for advice for our MBA students. And today, these are the future leaders of the world, and in the world that's going to be a very transformed place for businesses. What advice or expectations about communication skills for the MBA students that are listening today?
A few thoughts on successful 21st century business leadership. And I think this applies to in both in times of the pandemic, and hopefully we won't have another for a while, as well as in normal times. Tomorrow's best leaders must have a global worldview, and also they must have the ability to navigate diverse people, diverse places, and diverse cultures. They need to be as comfortable working in Chennai in China or Charlottesville. Secondly, successful leaders for today and tomorrow, they have to be master relationship builders who treat other people with respect and with dignity. And the very, very best are those who are able to build vibrant relationships across what I said before, the golden triangle of business, government, and civil society. Because only if you are able to build that vibrant relationships and partnership across the golden triangle of business, government, and civil society is when we're going to see some of the big societal problems of the world begin to be solved. Third, leaders for the 21st century tomorrow need to remain entrepreneurial with a strong respect for cash and the entrepreneurial spirit. Fourth, getting outside more. Get outside your school, your city, your industry. You know, get outside of your firm. Always learn something. Lastly, tomorrow, I think, is not going to belong to the cynics, but to the optimists. So I ask everyone to be a realistic optimist.
Muhtar, you just gave me chills when you said that tomorrow would belong to the optimist. I appreciate hearing that today.
Muhtar, thank you so much. Some great insights. I would be remiss, though, not to ask you before we jump off here, what's occupying your time?
I'm actually staying pretty busy. I'm the head of the governance and nominating committee there at the 3M board, and I've been there for 7-8 years now. I am a trustee at Emory University. I am the head of the advisory board for London Cass Business School. I am very proudly continue to be a member of the board of Special Olympics. I have my own educational foundation where we send 4 kids to the United States on a full scholarship from the area in Turkey that I come from, which is near the ancient city of Troy on the coast, Aegean coast. We send 4 kids. So at any point in time, there's 16 kids that we fund in the United States at universities from that region. And then finally, I just set up a Kent Global Conflict Resolution Program at Columbia University, which is dedicated to teaching young diplomats from all around the world in conflict resolution. And I bring together leaders from the golden triangle of government, business, and civil society, and ask those leaders to share their experience on practical experiences they've had in their careers on conflict resolution with these young diplomats. So that's what occupies my time.
That's fantastic. And just as we thought, Muhtar Kent will never retire. You'll be working up until the very end, my friend. Thank you so much, Muhtar. It's been a great pleasure to have you on our program today. Your insights are invaluable, and I know will be appreciated by our MBAs, and we'll be sharing this as well with the broader learning community here at Darden. We can't thank you enough, sir.
Good being with you both, and continued good luck, and most importantly, good health to both of you.
CEO Voices examines the communication that enables transformational leadership. June West is Associate Professor of Business Administration and co-founder of the Darden Leadership Communication Council, along with her colleague, Steve Soltis. Soltis is the former head of executive communication at the Coca-Cola Company and lectures at Darden. This podcast is a production of the University of Virginia Darden School of Business.